Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Deutsche Börse AG conference call regarding the results for the first quarter 2010. At this time, all participants have been placed on a listen-only mode, and the floor will be open for questions following the presentation. Let me now hand the floor over to your host, Mr. Erik Müller.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for joining us today to go through Deutsche Börse's first quarter 2010 results. With me is Gregor Pottmeyer, Chief Financial Officer. Gregor will take you through our results presentation, and after the presentation, we'll be very happy to take your questions. The presentation materials for this call have been sent out via email earlier today and can also be downloaded from the investor relations section of our website. As usual, this conference call will be recorded and is also available for replay. Let me now hand it over to you, Gregor.
Thank you, Erik. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining today's call. During this presentation, I will give you an overview of changes to our financial reporting structure, present our financial performance in the first quarter of 2010, including volume trends, and give you a brief update on our strategic priorities. Let me start with a short overview of the results in the first quarter. Despite the continued restraint amongst market participants, sales revenue in the first quarter increased compared to preceding quarters and amounted to 519.2 million euro. Costs in the first quarter decreased compared to the 2009 level, if adjusted for 27.8 million euro restructuring expenses relating to the efficiency measures announced in February this year. Adjusted for these restructuring expenses, EBIT in the first quarter amounted to 273.4 million euro, a significant increase compared to the last three quarters in 2009. Earnings per share in the first quarter 2010, adjusted for restructuring expenses, amounted to 0.95 euro, which is also above the level of the preceding three quarters. The implementation of the programs to optimize operational processes and costs that we announced in February and March 2010 are on track. Overall, this set of results is a further proof of our continued strong cash flow generation. In addition, we continue to consider our capital position as sound as a consequence of sequential sales revenue improvements paired with our continuous focus on cost control. The interest cover ratio, an important metric for the AA credit rating of Deutsche Börse AG, stood above the target of 16 times in the first quarter if adjusted for restructuring expenses. Before I present the results in more detail, I would like to provide you with an overview of changes to the financial reporting structure we implemented in the first quarter on page two. First, in order to further increase the transparency and comparability with our peers, we have simplified our segment structure. Under the new structure, we have merged the Information Technology segment and the Corporate Services segment into the market segments Xetra, Eurex, Clearstream, and Market Data and Analytics. Approximately half of the external IT sales revenue was allocated to the Xetra segment and approximately one quarter to each, the Eurex and Clearstream segments. The IT and corporate services costs were allocated to the four remaining segments according to actual usage. The 2009 figures in our financial reporting are adjusted to reflect this new segment structure. Second, effective since the beginning of this year, we net the own expenses capitalized line item with corresponding cost items. In the past, own expenses capitalized were shown to offset expenses relating to internal software development in case this software was capitalized. The netting results in a decrease of total revenues and accordingly costs by around €40 million per year. This change is neutral to earnings. The 2009 figures in our financial reporting are adjusted to reflect this change. Third, costs from the first quarter 2010 onwards are split into two categories: A, volume-related costs, and B, operating costs. Volume-related costs are comprised of the former fee and commission expenses from the banking business and other volume-related costs previously booked in the other operating expenses. This includes purchase of price information, the floor system operation, and sales-related costs at ISE. Operating costs include staff cost, depreciation, and other operating expenses without volume-related costs. The 2009 figures in our financial reporting are adjusted to reflect this change. Fourth, the basis for consolidation has changed in the first quarter 2010. On the one hand, the Coach subgroup has been deconsolidated at the end of 2009 because of a change to the joint venture agreement with the Swiss Exchange. As a result, Coach is not contributing sales revenue or cost to the Xetra segment anymore, but the Coach result attributable to Deutsche Börse is now shown in the at equity result of the segment. On the other hand, we fully consolidated Stocks Limited for the first time in the first quarter. Previously, Stocks was shown in the at equity result. As a result, the stock sales revenue and costs are now included in the market data and analytics segment. In the first quarter 2010, the sales revenue contribution of Stocks amounted to €5.8 million. I would now like to turn to the first quarter 2010 results. Business activity improved in the first quarter compared to the preceding three quarters, and as a result, sales revenue increased to €519.2 million. Net interest income amounted to €11 million in the first quarter. The decline against the fourth quarter 2009 is largely due to matured long-term investments we entered into late 2008 and early 2009 to secure the then higher interest rate levels, in addition to the hedge, which held up net interest income in 2009. We now keep the cash from matured investments in short-term maturities in order to fully benefit from an increase of short-term interest rates going forward. Costs for the group, adjusted for €27.8 million restructuring expenses for the operating efficiency measures we announced in February, declined to €271 million. EBIT in the first quarter, adjusted for restructuring expenses, amounted to €273.4 million. An increase compared to the preceding quarters. Net income, adjusted for restructuring expenses, amounted to €177.2 million, which is also an increase compared to the last three quarters. Finally, the adjusted earnings per share figure in the first quarter stood at 0.95 euro. I would now like to turn to the individual business segments, starting with the Xetra segment on page 4. The improvement of the economic environment in the first quarter 2010 had a positive effect on investor confidence and index levels. This resulted in a 17% rise of the order book volume on the electronic trading system Xetra, and a 6% increase on the trading floor in Frankfurt compared to the first quarter last year. The increase of equity volatility towards the end of April in the context of the development's increase has resulted in a year-over-year increase of cash trading activity of 26% in April 2010. Moving on to the financials of the Xetra segment on page 5. Adjusted for the deconsolidation of Scotch at the end of 2009, Xetra sales revenue in the first quarter increased year over year and quarter over quarter to 65 million euro. The Scotch contribution is now included in the result from equity investments in the Xetra segment. With the new segment structure, the others line item within the Xetra segment now also includes external IT sales revenue. In the first quarter 2010, the IT contribution amounted to 10.3 million euro. Furthermore, we are now displaying connectivity sales revenue as a separate line item in the Xetra segment. Previously, they were largely reported in the Xetra line item. The 2009 figures on this chart are adjusted according to those two changes. The sales revenue in basis points of the order book volume for Xetra clearing and the floor operation were stable compared to the preceding quarters. EBIT for the segment, adjusted for restructuring expenses, amounted to 32.2 million euro, an increase compared to the 2009 run rate. Turning to page 6 and the volume development in the Eurex segment. The total number of traded contracts in the first quarter 2010 fell by 6% year over year to 652 million. The decline is due in particular to weaker development in European index derivatives and US options, which could not be fully offset by the increase in interest rate derivatives. However, compared to the fourth quarter 2009, overall volumes increased by 8%. The decline of European index and equity derivatives against the first quarter 2009 is largely a result of the much lower equity volatility in Q1 2010. In European interest rate derivatives, the number of contracts traded rose significantly year over year due to changed expectations concerning inflation and interest rate development. With regards to the U.S. options traded on the International Securities Exchange, the number of contracts traded declined 18% year over year as a result of continued highly competitive environment. ISE's position in the U.S. options industry is being influenced mainly by the following three factors. First, the way in which dividend transactions are promoted on some U.S. equity option exchanges. Many exchange operators provide substantial financial incentives for traders to use their platforms when executing transactions. Second, changes in the ownership structure of ISE's competitors also led to fluctuation in market share. In October 2009, NYSE sold parts of its Amex options market to leading market participants, a so-called remutualization. Since then, the buyers have increased their share of orders placed with Amex. Third, in the second quarter of 2009, ISE was forced to discontinue offering certain crossing functionalities on the instructions of the SEC. ISE is currently in negotiations with the SEC in an attempt to neutralize the competitive disadvantage for fully electronic equity options trading compared with floor trading. ISE's management is addressing these challenges by focusing on 1. Winning new clients. Knight Securities, for instance, has commenced market making recently. 2. By developing new order types in line with the SEC's new market requirements. 3. By implementing a new hybrid fee model. 4. By rolling out a new low latency trading system at the end of 2010. 5. By implementing a clearing link between OCC and Eurex for European customers to trade at ISE while clearing takes place in Frankfurt. And 6. By continuously expanding the product and service offering. Similar to the positive development in the cash market, volumes on Eurex in Europe in April 2010 saw a significant pickup year over year and sequentially. This development continued into May, and on May 6, Eurex recorded its by far strongest day ever with 25.1 million contracts traded. However, the pickup is partly driven by a strong increase of volumes in single equity products. As in past years, these products are traded more frequently during the German dividend season. Given that most of the transactions are large block trades, the sales revenue contribution is limited. Nevertheless, the return of volatility to both the European fixed income and equity benchmarks should support Eurex volumes in the foreseeable future, while structural growth drivers remain largely intact. Sales revenue of the Eurex segment, shown on page 7, amounted to 213.8 million euro in the first quarter 2010. Compared to the same period in 2009, this is a decline of 6%, and compared to the preceding quarter, sales revenue increased by 7%. Under the new segment structure, the others line item within the Eurex segment now includes external IT sales revenue. In the first quarter 2010, the IT contribution amounted to 7.5 million euro. The 2009 figures are adjusted accordingly. Revenues per contract stood at 0.28 euro in the first quarter, a stable development compared to the preceding as well the prior year's quarter. Adjusted for restructuring expenses, the EBIT for the segment stood at 126.4 million euro, which is an increase compared to the preceding three quarters. I am now turning to page 8, which shows the development of the settlement and custody activity in the Clearstream segment. The average value of securities held in custody in the first quarter increased by 7% year-over-year to €10.7 trillion. The rise is due to higher equity market valuations as well as higher bond issuance activity. The number of settlement transactions rose by 16% compared to the first quarter 2009 to 27.9 million due to an increase in both domestic as well as international transactions. Compared to the fourth quarter 2009, the custody business developed stable, while the settlement activity saw moderate growth. In April 2010, the assets under custody increased to €10.9 trillion, an increase of 7% against April 2009. Settlement activity in April stood at 9.7 million transactions, 16% above the level in 2009. Moving on to the development of financials in the Clearstream segment on page 9. Custody sales revenue increased by 1% year-over-year to €109.7 million. The difference to the growth of the business activity is due to a less favorable product mix in the first quarter 2010 and consolidation of customers. Merged entities regularly fall into higher volume thresholds in the fee schedules, which slightly decreases average margins. At the same time, as a result of a fee reduction for settlement of German securities, which took effect on July 1, 2009, combined with a change of the product mix that saw a higher share of lower-priced internal transactions, settlement sales revenue increased by only 1% compared to the first quarter 2009 to €29.4 million. Despite the rise in overall GSF volumes, sales revenue in the GSF business decreased by 21% to €15 million. This was mainly due to a decline of market prices for securities held as collateral, which drive Clearstream's sales revenue in this business area. This decline is due to a normalization of the market environment compared to Q1 2009. Net interest income from banking business decreased to €11 million. As described earlier, the decline against the fourth quarter 2009 is mainly due to longer-term investments reaching maturity in the first quarter 2010. Under the new segment structure, the others line item within the Clearstream segment now includes external IT sales revenue. In the first quarter 2010, the IT contribution amounted to €5.9 million. The 2009 figures are adjusted accordingly. In total, revenues of the Clearstream segment amounted to €198.9 million, a decrease against the first and fourth quarter 2009, attributable to the decline in net interest income. EBIT in the Clearstream segment, adjusted for restructuring charges, amounted to €83.6 million, an increase compared to the third and fourth quarter 2009. Let me now turn to page 10 to talk about our continued focus on growth initiatives and operating efficiency, while maintaining our strong financial position. First, we remain focused on growth opportunities within each of our business segments. For this purpose, we increased the annual expenses for growth initiatives and advancements of technology by more than 50% to around 100 million euro in 2010 in order to take advantage of opportunities arising from the changing market environment. With these investments, Deutsche Börse Group is well positioned to assume a leading role amongst the operators of financial market infrastructure also in the future. This includes in particular our strengths in technology, risk management, and product innovation. As always, organic growth can be complemented by external growth opportunities if they make sense from a shareholder, customer, and company perspective. Second, we will continue to work on further improving our operating efficiency, in particular, strict cost discipline and tax efficiency. To increase the operating efficiency, we have resolved and communicated significant further cost measures in the first quarter. The measures have two components. First, we are streamlining the group's management structure and reducing non-staff expenses. Cost savings of 50 million euro a year will be achieved from 2011 onwards. The cost for these measures will amount to around 40 million euro, of which 27.8 million euro were booked in the first quarter. Second, we will further optimize the processes of the group and increase the focus on our core competencies. In addition, operating functions will be reassigned across the group's locations and previously outsourced activities. For example, in the IT area, will be brought in-house. This will reduce the number of external service providers by around one half. At the same time, we will drive forward the harmonization of Deutsche Börse Group's IT infrastructure. The group's locations in Asia, especially Singapore, will also be enhanced to be closer to customers in growth regions. From 2013 onwards, we expect to realize additional savings of around 100 million euro a year with these measures. One third of these savings is to be achieved as early as 2011. Two thirds are expected to be generated by 2012 and the full run rate by 2013. The restructuring expenses will amount to less than 200 million euro, which are expected to largely incur in 2010. All in all, the two components will lead to a significant increase in cost efficiency. Both measures combined will lead to savings totaling around 150 million euro per year from 2013 onwards. In addition, we work to further reduce our tax rate to below 27% by finalizing our move to a new office building in Eschborn in the second half of 2010. Upon completion of the move, we should reach a level of around 26% in 2011. Third, in the context of capital management, we will continue to focus on retaining our strong financial position and our excellent credit rating profile. This includes achieving an interest cover ratio of 16 times on the group level. In the first quarter, adjusted for restructuring expenses, our interest cover ratio stood at 16.6 times. We consider our capital position as sound and do not expect a significant change in capital requirements in the foreseeable future. The main reason for this is the fact that we are largely operating a transaction-based business model. As in the past, we work closely with regulators to make sure they fully understand the low-risk nature of our business model, with a view to mitigate any potential impact of regulatory changes that banks might face in the future. Moving on to the last page of today's presentation, a reconciliation of total cost with the newly introduced operating cost line item. As presented earlier on this call, we have split costs from the first quarter 2010 onwards into two categories, A, volume-related costs, and B, operating costs. For 2010, we budgeted around 265 million euro volume-related costs. In the first quarter, we were running below that figure, but we expect to see some pickup through the remainder of 2010. The main reason why volume-related costs are lower than is expected is Clearstream. On the one hand, volume-related costs in GSF have declined in line with the sales revenue development. And on the other hand, we have taken measures to optimize fees and commissions relating to third-party services Clearstream is using. In addition to the volume-related costs, we deduct around 40 million euro of costs that relate to the eliminated line item own expenses capitalized from the 2010 cost guidance of a maximum of 1,250 million euro to reconcile our operating cost target with our cost guidance. As a result, we expect the operating cost in 2010, excluding restructuring expenses, to be a maximum of 945 million euro. This is not a new cost guidance, but a reconciliation between our cost guidance and the newly introduced income statement line item operating cost. So let me summarize. Business activity since the start of the year has improved, and accordingly, we achieved an increase of sales revenue in the first quarter compared to the preceding three quarters. If adjusted for the restructuring expenses, the EBIT also increased compared to the prior three quarters. Due to the recent surge in volatility in the global financial markets, we see encouraging volume trends in most areas of our business and several days of record trading volumes on Eurex in May. With our continuous focus on growth initiatives and operating efficiency, while maintaining our strong financial position, we are well positioned to benefit from increased volatility and the further recovery of financial markets. With this, I conclude my presentation. We are now happy to take your questions.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press 9* on your telephone keypad. In case you wish to cancel your question, press 9* again. Please press now 9* to state your questions. And the first question comes from Bruce Hamilton from Morgan Stanley, UK. May we have your question, please?
Thanks. Hi, guys. Good afternoon. I've got three or four fairly quick ones. So, firstly, just checking on the kind of cost run rate, you're running about 10% below guidance at the minute, and on volume-related costs, you're running, you know, closer to 20% below guidance. Is there any reason why, I know there's a normal seasonality in Q4, but are there any other reasons why your costs will be materially higher in, say, Qs 2 and 3. Are we sort of well below on project spend or other, just to understand? Secondly, if I could just understand the AGM item where you're looking to increase your authorization for share issuance to 20% from 10% without resort to shareholders. Could you explain the thinking behind that? Because I guess, you know, one could argue that your sort of M&A track record, for example, has been somewhat mixed. Thirdly, just to get your sort of current view on the US and likely European derivative market reform and how you can position yourselves to benefit from that. And then finally, just on NII, just to check there's no funny. So assuming rates don't increase in either the US or Europe, we'd be right to assume 11 million per quarter should be roughly the run rate for NII going forward. Thank you.
Okay, let's start with your first question, that we are currently roughly 10% below our cost running rate. So from our perspective, so one reason is with regard to volume-related costs, and there are basically two components relevant. So one component is that we saw a decline in the volume-related costs in our GSF business, and in parallel, we have seen a loss, reduced revenues there, and in parallel, we have also reduced costs there. So that is basically one reason. The other reason is that we were able to renegotiate some purchasing contracts. So on the Clearstream side, so we were able to reduce our cost basis there too. In general, with regard to our operating expenses, we are also below the running rate, but that is one reason you already mentioned is some seasonal effects where in the Q1 costs are lower than, let's compare it with quarter four. So that's basically a reason too. So overall, we keep to our cost guidance, as we said, with 1,250 million euro. Second topic with regard to the capital authorization in the AGM. We currently have an authorization to increase our capital by a total of around 13%. In our AGM agenda, we propose to shareholders to increase this authorization to a total of 30%, composed of 20% with a possibility to exclude subscription rights, and 10% without the possibility for the company to exclude shareholder subscription rights. The background to this proposal is simply general financing flexibility. We have no intention to raise capital for operating purposes, nor do we currently work on any large M&A transaction. Since publication of the AGM agenda in early April, we have received a positive voting recommendation from Risk Metrics and Glass Lewis for the proposal to increase capital. This was your second question. Your third question with regard to the regulatory reforms and the impact. Accelerated by the financial market crisis, a harmonized set of rules for the operation and supervision of central counterparties are key element of regulatory considerations. The discussion takes into consideration the regulatory pressures to boost processing of business through regulated markets and central counterparties in place of OTC transactions and OTC processing. The EU Commission is also striving for a revision of the Market and Financial Instrument Directive, MiFID, in 2010. Beyond that, the EU Commission intends to press forward with the standardization of the legal framework for central counterparties and central securities depositories within the scope of a European Market Infrastructure Directive, as well as a proposal for the regulation of European securities law. The concrete impact of these plans cannot be foreseen at this time, as they are for the most part in the draft phase. The entire process is being followed closely by Deutsche Börse Group. The group participates actively in consultation and ensures that political decision makers are aware of the potential negative consequences for the market as a whole and the affected company in particular. In this way, Deutsche Börse counters undue ramifications for the group or one of its subsidiaries. The fourth question with regard to NII, with Eric.
Yes, thank you, Gregor. On NII, I think what you pointed out is correct. The further results there in quarters 2, 3, and 4 will depend on the interest rate environment going forward. We have seen historic lows again, also on the observed 2009 rates, happening in Q1 2010. Since then, there was a little bit of a recovery just in the last couple of weeks, but as we go forward, I think also with the ECB measures announced, any meaningful rate increase on the short end of the curve in the euro is probably some way off. US maybe earlier, but that remains to be seen as well. The other factor influencing the NII is obviously the average customer cash balances. So in the first quarter, that number stood at just short of 6 billion euro. What we have seen in April and May so far is actually a strong or continued strong customer cash balance development. So we are a bit higher than the Q1 run rate so far in Q2. So overall, I think Q1 is something of the lower end of what we expected to see.
Thank you.
The next question comes from Mike Vinciquerra from BMO Capital Markets US. May we have your question, please?
Thank you. Good afternoon. Two things. One, I just wanted to clarify the 240 million euro in restructuring costs we're expecting. Eric, are you asking analysts to put that into our published estimates or not? I think we have some discrepancies between the way we're all publishing in terms of our estimates. I just want to make sure we're all on the same basis.
Yeah, what we do is actually we provide full transparency on the topic. So as we said in our releases, up to 240 million out of the two programs that Gregor described are likely to come into the P&L largely this year, 27.8 of which we have shown or taken as a provision in the first quarter. So if you are estimating EPS for 2010, we certainly give you all the detail we can for you to include that in your numbers. We have observed as well that this is not being consistently included in the numbers, but my takeaway is that most analysts now include that in their estimates.
Very good. Okay, thank you. And I also just wanted to follow up on the regulatory issue. There's certainly some concern among your U.S. Derivatives competitors that the rules may not be fully harmonized between the U.S. regulation and legislation and what's going to come out of the EU. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because there's the thought is that there may be an advantage to being in the EU without perfect harmonization because they are looking at very stringent rules and requirements in the U.S. Senate right now.
Yes, we have always pointed out the fact that legislation in the past legislation takes in the U.S. is different from the process in the EU. Now the U.S. has, let's say, published proposals and in our view is very concretely pursuing rules for the industry here, which could be letters of the law maybe by the end of the year. In Europe, that process may take longer simply because there are more constituencies involved in passing EU legislation, and then EU legislation would have to be transferred also into local laws. It's a different point, and that's the mechanics or the technical differences and the speed of which regulation is taking place. The other topic is the content of that. And it's our impression that there is an endeavor of all the institutions, organizations, governments involved to talk to each other and to discuss certain sets of regulation to make sure regulatory arbitrage is not possible. But obviously we don't know what the outcome will be. There may be differences in the end in regulation, and certainly at our end of the world here, we are following the regulatory developments very closely, and we offer our input to all the procedures and consultations that the Commission has initiated here in our jurisdiction.
Very good. And then just finally, in the derivatives OTC space, where do you see Eurex's best opportunities? You've obviously already got a CDS offering. Are you looking at opportunities in interest rate swaps, or what other areas do you think you have the best competitive opportunity?
Well, the competitive opportunity obviously is that Eurex has a broad product portfolio. So unlike some of the exchanges elsewhere in the U.S., for example, you have also two sets of regulators or supervisors for the options market, or parts of the options market, namely equity options, and you have different regulators for the futures market. We have all of that under one roof here from a regulatory purpose and also from an exchange purpose. We have diversification in fixed income as well as in equity derivatives. We are looking to expand our offering in commodities through our primarily through our ownership of a company called EEX, the European Energy Exchange here in Germany, where we own we are a significant minority owner in that venture and have several cooperation agreements in place here. And finally, in the clearing space, we are adapting our clearing capabilities in such a way that we can cater for the needs in the OTC derivative space. Obviously, here CDS has been our initial focus, and we'll act flexibly to accommodate any other industry needs or regulatory needs in terms of branching that clearing capability out to other asset classes. But we don't have a prefixed agenda in terms of which is the next asset class. Rather, we act flexibly and we use our current clearinghouse capability to address the market needs that will be evolving also depending on the outcome of the regulatory process.
Great. Thank you very much, guys.
Mr. Daniel Jarrett from Barclays Capital UK, may we have your question, please?
Yes, good afternoon. Daniel Jarrett from Barcap here. A couple of quick questions on the ISC part of your business, and then the third one on Eurex clearing, if I may. I noticed with regards to sort of ISC's market share, it started dipping down to sort of low 20s from about November time of last year. It seems to have dipped further below sort of 20% in March, April of this year. You outlined a number of sort of challenges facing you, but I wonder if you could provide a bit more color on what specifically has caused that sort of second dip down in market share. I remember at the time of the purchase of ISC, you emphasizing the cross-selling opportunities between ISC and Eurex. So I wonder if you could provide any more detail on the success you're having in that respect with regard to the different offering the Eurex's wider product base to the ISC customer base, for instance, and also when might we hear more about the finalization of the clearing link between Eurex Clearing and the OCC. Lastly, on Eurex clearing, can you give us any more sort of detail about timeline when we might hear further initiatives, perhaps specifically addressing the swaps market? Is the timeline for those new initiatives actually being sort of dictated by the legislation out there, or would you move in advance in terms of new initiatives ahead of potential new regulatory change? Thank you.
Okay. With regard to the market share loss at ISE, so in 2009, the market share of ISE in equity and ETF options stood at roughly 28%. In Q1, the market share declined to a level of 23%, and in April, it stood at roughly 20%. So ISE position in the U.S. options industry is being influenced mainly by the following factors. So first, the way in which dividend transactions are promoted on some U.S. equity option exchanges. Many exchange operators provide substantial incentives for traders to use their platform when executing transactions. And dividend trading is not a profitable business, and that's the reason why we don't offer it. Second, changes in the owner structure of the ISE competitors also led to a fluctuation in market share. In October 2009, NYSE sold part of its Amex options market to leading market participants, a so-called remutilization. Since then, the buyers have increased their share of orders placed with Amex. Furthermore, CBOE is preparing IPO within this year, and the broker-dealers who own CBOE still keep all the order floors on this platform. Furthermore, in the second quarter of 2009, ISE was forced to discontinue offering certain crossing functionalities on the instruction of the SEC. ISE is currently in negotiation with the SEC in an attempt to neutralize the competitive disadvantage for fully electronic equity options trading compared with floor trading. So ISE management is addressing all these challenges by focusing on the six measures I already explained in my speech. So far, that's our answer and our view with regard to the ISE. Yes, the second question with regard to Eurex credit clearing. So currently, as Eric already mentioned, it depends on the legislation. So when there's a need that we exactly know what the regulators want to see. And secondly, it depends on the requirements of our customer. So far, at least the regulator's point of view is not fully clear. And so far, we are prepared, as Eric already mentioned. But currently, we have also to wait for a final decision from the regulator.
I asked about, in addition, about the cross-selling opportunity between ISE and the Eurex customer base. I remember at the time that was a big emphasis on your rationale for the purchase of ISE. Can you say any more about that?
Yes. I forgot to explain it in detail. Yes, you are right. It's an important topic for us, and we are in very close negotiations with the regulators, with the SEC, and we still hope to get approval from the regulators to start this link, so that Eurex customers are able to trade ISE products from Europe side here. So we are still in negotiations. We have still a good hope that we get the approval of the SEC, but currently we cannot judge when we will get it.
Okay, thank you.
The next question comes from Johannes Thurmann from HSBC Germany. May we have your question, please?
Good afternoon, everybody. Johannes Thurmann, HSBC. Three questions, if I may. First of all, Eric, you mentioned the average cash balance. Was there any specific reason that it trended down in Q1? or did you reduce your margin calls? Secondly, concerning your dividend policy, you previously had a 40% to 60% payout ratio policy. 2009, we saw an exception. Would you feel comfortable again to repeat this exception for 2010, or do you think it's more likely that the old measure of 40% to 60% is a good run rate for the company, looking at the other financial covenants and so on? And last but not least, you talked about the structural growth drivers, but the banking industry sees massive shifts. And do you really believe that all the old structural growth drivers are still in place? And what are the three major ones for you? Thank you.
So I would like to start with a dividend policy, and then Eric can answer the other two questions. So our dividend policy, as you mentioned, is still in place. It's 40% to 60% of our net income. So far, we didn't. There was no exemption in 2009, at least from our understanding, because we looked through the IFE impairment testing impacts of roughly 200 million euro on the net income side, and therefore, as we looked through it, we in our thinking, our mind is that we fulfill our dividend policy with 40% to 60%. And our understanding is that we also would look through additional restructuring costs for the year 2010. So we would do it comparable to the situation in 2009, and we would still keep then our dividend policy with 40% to 60% of our net income.
Okay, thank you.
Average customer cash balances stood in the first quarter at 5.9 billion. That's sequentially, so versus Q4, an increase. Year over year, it's a slight decrease. There was no specific development that I could point to that is worth mentioning here. As I mentioned earlier on one of the questions, April and May looks a bit stronger than the average for Q1 2010 again. Structural growth drivers, as Gregor pointed out in his presentation, yes, we do believe they are largely intact, and that's true across the three main segments, cash market, Eurex, and Clearstream. And just to name one of the key drivers for each segment, we do believe that in the cash market, we will see a further electronification of the, let's say, order flows, as we have seen in the past. So the trend for algo type of trading to go from, let's say, levels of 10% or so 4 years ago to the levels of 50% or so that we are seeing more recently, and by the way, stable throughout the financial crisis, is something that we would expect to contribute also in the future to the growth of cash markets generally. And yes, there are some issues that are being publicly discussed at the moment, but these type of order flows provide important liquidity to the market. So we see that continuing. On Eurex, one of the key drivers that were structural drivers that we've been mentioning in the past and that we believe is intact is the trend from the long-only side, in brackets, that's where most of the assets in the world are held under management, that these, let's say, market participants will become even more sophisticated and active users of derivatives products going forward, and this has to do with deregulation in the field. So these customers or end customers of exchanges are increasingly also allowed to use the products. As you know, in the past, before the UCITS 3 world, they weren't simply allowed to do that. Now, thirdly, to name one of the key drivers in Clearstream, we do see a continued trend towards issuance of bonds in the international versus the domestic markets. And on top of that, it's the, let's say, accumulators of these assets increasingly decide to hold their assets, even if they were domestic assets originally, in the international markets, which makes us, have a positive outlook for that business, as we are competing here with Euroclear, where we have won over the last years market share. So these are the three main drivers I'd like to mention here.
Thank you.
The next question comes from Andrew Mitchell from Macquarie UK. May we have your question, please?
Yes, thank you. Three questions. The first one, I wonder if you could tell us a bit more about the investment you talked about in the statement in Asia, how what that entails, and whether it actually absorbs a great deal of cash. Secondly, you mention an innovative trading system relating to your IT capabilities, and I wonder if you could explain what that means. And then thirdly, you touched on acquisition opportunities in your normal format. I'm just wondering whether you felt that the opportunities were more attractively priced currently, because I think one of your competitors has suggested that might be the case.
Okay. First, I would like to give you an overview of our project activities in Asia, so starting with Clearstream. This region has become an important growth driver, and Clearstream has been represented there for 20 years. In 2009, we opened a fully functioning branch offices in Singapore in the autumn of 2009, the first of its kind outside of Europe. This new branch will facilitate across the financial markets for our Asian Pacific clients, as well as increasing efficiency and security. These improved services will contribute towards interoperability with the Asia Pacific region, while also enabling consolidation and pooling of collateral in the whole region and beyond. This means that collateral can be used very efficiently and additional liquidity opportunities exploited. With regard to the Eurex segment, we also considerably expanded our local presence there in 2009. Our new representatives' offices in Hong Kong, Tokyo, and Singapore enable us to be physically present in the three important financial centers. We feel local representation is essential in order to gain new customers and develop existing business. We have noticed a general increase in demand for benchmark products from this region. What's more, some markets have only just started to admit or promote derivatives trading. Currently, there are 10 members admitted out of Asia Pacific, and several firms are in the admission process. The volume generated by the Asian members has tripled in 2009 compared with 2008. Regard to your second question, this innovative trading system. So we started this project already 1 year ago. Its internal name is Optimize. So it's an implementation of a new trading system. And we start to implement this trading system at the ISE at the end of this year. And it's our target also to use this platform as a platform for our Xetra business and also for our Eurex business. So far, final decisions are not made, but we are clearly working firstly to implement it at the ISE and secondly prepare the implementation also in the Xetra business and subsequently also then in the Eurex business. And it will take another roughly 2 years before we are able to implement this in the other two areas. With regard to your third question, M&A, in principle, we regard organic growth operational efficiency and capital management as our priorities. Naturally, we also pay close attention to changes in the exchange industry landscape. However, as a premier multi-asset and multi-product exchange organization globally, with a track record for superior financial performance, we do not feel under pressure to change our business model or enter into a transformational deal. In fact, many M&A projects in our sector seem to be geared towards copying our successful business model. Nevertheless, organic growth can be complemented by external growth options, if they make sense from a shareholder perspective, as well as from the point of view of our customers and the company. And as you are aware, in 2009, we did smaller M&A transactions, especially in the area of market data and analytics. Most prominent example is the stocks, where we got the majority, where we increased our stake from 33% to above 50%. So this was a transaction. Then we did some other smaller transaction in this MD&A area. So we are open, but it has to make sense from a customer's, company's, and shareholder's perspective.
Thank you. That brings us to the end. We have time for just one more question before we'll finish the call.
The last question comes from Peter Martin from LBBW Germany. May we have your question?
Good afternoon. It's Martin Peter speaking, LBBW. I think I have two follow-ups. So firstly, on the ISE again, assuming that you cannot change the global bank's attitude towards the competitors, that means the market share of 20% might further decline to, let's say, at least beyond the 20% level. So assuming that, does this mean that there will be no impairment for ISE in the current year? Can you affirm that? Or is that possible if we see further significant declines? And secondly, again, a follow-up on the cost, on total costs. I was wondering why you put not a little bit more costs into the Q1 result, given the high burden from the restructuring expenses in the next couple of quarters, because a huge part of the revenues will be wiped out by these restructuring costs. So obviously, the figures will be pretty bad, on at least at first glance. Wasn't there any leeway for you to put a little bit more costs aside? That means booking it in Q1 rather than Q2. Thanks.
Okay, your first question with regards to ISE. So we have roughly a decline of 20% compared to previous year. And when you look at the impairment testing, then we also already did this 20% decrease in our intangible assets. So far, we are currently, with regard to the volume, in line with our impairment testing case. More important is what we expect for the future. And for the future, we assumed in our case that we will see double-digit growth rate in the U.S. equity options market from 2011, 12, and 13. And so far, there's no indication currently that we do not see this growth in the U.S. equity option market. But we are constantly looking at this, analyzing this, but so far, from a numbers perspective, there's currently no indication to do an additional impairment test. Second, your questions with regard to the low level of restructuring cost of 28 million euro in Q1.
Sorry, not low level of restructuring costs, but the excluding restructuring costs, your cost base was extremely low in Q1, and that's the question. Why not putting more aside in Q1 from the normal costs, so to say, not the restructuring ones?
We are not influencing the balance sheet. We take the costs as they are, And currently, as already mentioned in Q1, there are also some seasonal effects where it's very normal that the costs are under a linear forecast, and that's I explained why we are currently below this level. So seasonal effects, and also with regard to volume related costs, I made some remarks, and with regard to the restructuring cost, that was the level what we were able to build provisions as we discussed it with our auditor.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you very much. This brings us to the end of the call. We hope to speak to you soon and see you soon. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.